6:30 on a Thursday morning. That signifies time for Spectrum West on this 220th day of the year. A couple of things happened on this date in history. 1876, Thomas Edison got a patent for the mimeograph. And then we went on to smell those wonderful sheets when we were in school. The great train robbery in England happened on this date in 1963. Nixon announced his resignation on this date in 74. Happy birthday, Esther Williams, Donnie Most, Doug Melvin, the Brewers guy, Dustin Hoffman, Frank Howard, Mel Tillis, all with birthdays today. On the program today, it's the Vision and the Word 5, where poets and artists meet. Beginning next week at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, Alan Jenkins has the details for us. Brady Swenson is here, both in America and on the show today. The Chippewa Falls native is visiting and will put on a show next Thursday at the Heidi Center. Bill Jamerson joins us by phone to provide a preview of the stories and songs he'll be sharing this weekend at the U.S. Chainsaw Sculpting Championships coming to Carson Park in Eau Claire. I'm Al Ross, and we christen this Spectrum West voyage with good friend and special literary and theatrical correspondent Jim Oliver, who shares a chat he had with the director of yet another in a year-round and talented chorus line of community theater events, this time in Rice Lake.
On Wednesday, the Northern Star Theater Company of Rice Lake will open the musical comedy Monty Python's Spamalot. Show will continue Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, and the following Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday at the theater in downtown Rice Lake. There are no Saturday performances. Joining us to talk about Spamalot is the director of the Northern Star Theater production, Tamara Sharp. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I read one reviewer who said Monty Python's Spamalot raises silliness to an art form. So I guess we can say the show is pretty funny.
Yes. I'm not maybe as much a Monty Python fan as every guy I meet out there is, but I hear a lot of interest being expressed by young men of my acquaintance. And it's a different kind of humor.
Uh-huh. Now, it's based on a movie, right?
Yes, The Holy Grail.
Okay. Everything I read says it's really funny. Now, apparently it doesn't tickle your funny bone quite as much as it does the rest of us.
But I'm not going to talk at length about all the silly things because it gives it away.
Well, sure,
I think people who've seen the movie know that at one point a life-size stuffed cow is thrown over the ramparts at Arthur and his knights.
Okay.
So it's kind of slapstick, things like that.
Okay, well, without giving anything away, just give us an idea of what the show is about.
Arthur is gathering knights for the round table, and then they're going to go on a quest to find the Holy Grail. He meets a lot of strange characters that you wouldn't necessarily find in the old Arthurian tales, but they're part of Monty Python's Arthur. They meet the French taunter who insults them viciously with a very bad French accent, but the insults are actually in English. He runs into problems with finding the Grail. They meet weird knights called the Knights of Knee in the Enchanted Forest who won't let them pass through the forest unless they produce a Broadway musical. They visit Camelot on their way to the Grail. So they take a lot of side trips.
Uh-huh. Now, I have to ask you this. I'm not sure if it's a fair question or not, but there is farce and then there's comedy. And I have never seen the show, so I can't speak with any intelligence. But is there an element of farce to it, or is it just straight off-the-wall comedy?
Well, I would say it's pretty farcical.
Oh, okay.
It's just utter nonsense, and because sometimes it doesn't make sense or even fall into a predictable storyline.
Okay.
That makes it the humor all the more quirky because it comes out of nowhere.
Well, tell us who the principal actors are.
We're really lucky to have kind of a local celebrity, I guess, in the area, Patrick Liddle, playing King Arthur. He's been in a lot of shows in our region, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Has a great voice. And that quirky sense of humor that he needs to be Arthur.
Sure.
And then his knights are played by Luke Pennington, who is Galahad. Greg Wolk is Robin. Sam Bilo is Sir Bedivere. Brendan Brown is playing Lancelot. And then Decker Slowey is his trusted servant slash horse, Patsy. And, of course, the Lady of the Lake is Heather Love.
Oh, okay.
So most of those characters are, well, not characters, most of those actors are from Rice Lake.
Probably have to be a bit of a character in order to play those roles, would you
yeah.
say? She is Tamara Sharp, director of the Northern Star Theater production of Monty Python's Spamalot. It's a musical, so who is your musical director and choreographer?
Well, we have two people helping with music. Kate Kopke is our rehearsal pianist. She's also our vocal coordinator, woman of many, many talents. And Jim Hurst is our orchestra director, and he'll be working with the other nine musicians who make up the pit. We're going to have a nice full sound and a lot of fun with this.
Mm-hmm. Is there choreography to the show, too, as well? Or?
I actually have two cast members who have split the choreography. Heather Love is working on it, and Greg Wolk, who plays Sir Robin. They both have some dance backgrounds. When I say dance, I mean it broadly. You know, it's dance in the Monty Python vein.
So there's a lot of stage movement, which you'd call perhaps more than the real dance.
Well, we'll let you be surprised by it, I guess.
All right. As I recall from our past conversations, you are a retired English teacher. You've also been involved with the development of the children's theater at the Northern Star. Yeah, talk about that a little bit. When did that get started, and how has it grown over the years?
Well, Northern Star Theater has been in existence coming up on 20 years, and we started the program for youth maybe 10 or 11 years ago. It has grown each year, so we keep splitting the program. At first, it was just children's theater, and then we became too big, so we split off the teens, and we have a teens on stage program. And then that became too big, so we split off and created a middle school program. So now we have kids on stage for elementary ages, tweens for the middle school, and teens for the high school students. And what we try to do is create a production for each of those so that they can be featured in their own special, age-appropriate kind of show, learn some stagecraft, behind-the-scenes kinds of support, as well as just performing on stage. And we have pretty strong numbers.
What shows did you do this year, or are you still in the process?
Well, we do a combination of things. We do the set-aside shows, and then we also do shows sometimes where kids can be involved. So this year in June, our big production was The Wizard of Oz, and naturally, we had really small kids as munchkins, and then older kids played Winkies and Poppies and all the colorful characters that are a part of The Wizard of Oz. Our teens in the spring did Bye Bye Birdie, which is a pretty big production. And we had a handful of middle school kids in that as well. And then kind of at the end of last year, we did a children's production of A Christmas Carol as a December offering. So it changes from year to year.
So it isn't necessarily a summer theater that it did spread out through the year.
We're there all year long.
So you never take a vacation, is that the idea?
Well, there's always some interesting show to do.
Well, sure. They keep writing them, I guess. So good. Getting back to Monty Python again, what led Northern Star to select Monty Python's Spamalot?
Wow, that's an interesting question. And believe it or not, we've been on a waiting list for the show for about 9 years. It was advertised that long ago as being available for community theaters, and then, strangely enough, they decided to go on a national tour. Mm-hmm. So while it was touring, all of those of us who had signed up and were terribly excited about it were put on hold.
Oh.
They announced about a year ago that they would be releasing it for production of community theaters starting September 1st. Mm. And we kind of begged for permission to do it in August, a month earlier than the release. And I don't know if it's because we're way up in northwestern Wisconsin or what, but they said, okay, you can do it.
Oh, okay.
So we've been waiting a long time. We had done years ago Camelot, like a lot of community theaters do. And
sure.
We just thought we were being terribly clever, saving the costumes and the swords and all that for Spamalot. They'd been sitting in storage for a while. But now we're going to get to use some of them.
Hey, well, that's thinking ahead, I guess, is the idea there.
I think one of your local theaters is doing Spamalot in upcoming months, and sorry, I can't remember if it's Eau Claire or Chippewa.
No, it's the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. In fact, they're just having auditions this coming week.
So. But news to them, we have 127 costumes for this show and about 230 props.
Wow.
And we would be happy to share them after the show.
Okay.
You know, when you go to that much trouble to put something together, it's always fun when you can see somebody else use bits and pieces. So.
Well, I will pass that along to
the
theater.
There you have it.
Okay, very good. Well, we've been visiting with Tamara Sharp, director of the Northern Star Theater production of Monty Python's Spamalot. The show opens next Wednesday and runs through August 25th at the theater in Rice Lake. For ticket information, you can search the internet for the Northern Star website or call 715-736-4444. Tamara Sharp, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you for calling, and we'll see you at the show.
You bet. Thanks, Jim Oliver. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Festival Foods, dedicated to making grocery shopping easier for all shoppers with the introduction of pink, yellow, and green boomerang buy tags throughout the store. Festival Foods, a Wisconsin-grown company.
Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery in a local and fair trade gallery. Details at simply-dunn.com.
Support also comes from Visit Winona, where the scenic Great River Road leads to a summer full of hiking and biking adventures, blufftop panoramas to river valley scenes. Visit Winona.com. This is the year to discover Winona's outdoors.
Spectrum West and a Spectrum Memo. Tuesday Night Blues from the Chippewa Valley Blues Society presents Dave Lambert and the Blues Motivators next Tuesday, August 13th. Owen Park Band Shell, Eau Claire. Volume 1 again presents the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park, downtown Eau Claire. Tonight, Thursday night, it's Sarah Krueger, or Krieger, I don't know how she pronounced it. People in Wisconsin do it differently. Jeff White is there, and Honey Tree also will perform. First Notes, scheduled to drift across the confluence at about 6:30. Next Thursday, the 15th, it's the Frenettes, the Merryweathers, and Sean Jones. Plus, appearing at the Volume 1 World Headquarters Friday evening, it's Nancy Dawn Olson from 7 to 8 p.m. Well, Bill Jamerson appreciates the past, especially the struggles it took to maintain the lifestyle of the logger, the miner, and the participants in the Civilian Conservation Corps that kept many families afloat during the very rough decade some 80-plus years ago. And his reverence for the people and the times comes alive during performances of songs and stories relating to those tough times, and he's coming back to the U.S. Open Chainsaw Sculpting Championships in Eau Claire this weekend. I had the chance to talk with Bill Jamerson via phone near his home in the Upper Peninsula. It's always good to have a youper on the program.
Well, you know, I've only lived up there for 13 years. You don't qualify to be a youper. Your grandfather has to be born there. It's a closed society. I came from below the bridge, Mackinac Bridge, and they call us trolls. So I'm a kind of a transplant.
Well, you present programs within the history through song concept. I was imagining all the work that must have gone into putting your shows together, a lot of history and research. But then I wondered if that's an ongoing process. Are you always uncovering new stories and details that help your performances evolve?
I am. Every time I give a performance, someone comes up afterwards and tells me a story. My grandfather was a skidder in the lumber camps, and he was the best skidder, and the other guys were jealous, so they gave him the worst horse. But he was still the best skidder. Then he goes into all the details, you know? And so I kind of add that to my lumberjack program. So I'm collecting stories from the children and grandchildren of iron miners, ski jumpers, lumberjacks, and I incorporate these in my programs. It makes it fun, it makes it timely, and people enjoy that. For example, the other day, I gave a program on the Civilian Conservation Corps, and I'll be doing one of these programs over at the chainsaw carving program at the Paul Bunyan. In my program, I talk about how people were too proud to accept relief. back in the 1930s. They would rather starve. And a woman came up after her. She says, you know, I'm here today because my father was too proud to accept relief. I said, huh? My mother and father had four children, and they were so broke they couldn't afford any more children, and they wanted to have an abortion when the fifth child came along. But the doctor had to be paid, and the doctor said, go down to the county, and they'll give you some money. And he was too proud to accept. Wow. So they did not have the abortion, and she was living proof. And she said, my father always spoiled me. And I think it's because he felt a little guilty, you know? Mm-hmm. He treated me different.
As a word in the title of your documentary film suggests, there's a bunch of this that will and is being forgotten if we don't remind ourselves. I remember vacationing in northern Wisconsin as a kid, and my parents were always quick to point out CCC projects and make us aware of what a successful program it was. Tell us another CCC story. The one I liked when I was online was about the guy with the stale cereal.
Yeah. Just for your listeners' appreciation, the CCC was a work program in the 1930s. It employed 94,000 young men in Wisconsin between 17 and 25 years of age. They were sent out to these work camps run by the Army. They built bridges and roads. They planted forests at Chequamegon and Nicolet Forest, built our beautiful state parks. I've met hundreds of these fellows over the last 20 years. And one of my favorite stories is the camp cook was throwing out a dozen boxes of stale cereal, and one of the fellows asked permission for it, and he put it in a gunny sack, and he was able to go home on the weekend. He hitched a ride on a freight train, rode it for 8 hours in the dead of winter on an open rail car, hopped off that train, walked 19 miles to his family's farm to give his brothers and sisters stale cereal. You see, these young men, they joined the CCs to get out of town for adventure, but the reason they stuck it out was the money was being sent home to help their families. They'd do anything to help their families.
Yeah, no kidding.
They would get letters from home, and they would cry because they were so happy to help their families. Because they made a dollar a day, but $25 a month was sent home directly to their families. Yeah. They never saw that.
Wow. So. Yeah, you know, and I was intrigued by the photographs that you take of yourself with people who come to your programs carrying things like license plates and banners. And I mean, that CCC involvement was something that they were, and probably even more so today, are pretty proud of.
Yeah, a woman brought some snowshoes. Another brought a hand-woven basket. The children and grandchildren of the CCC are so proud. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they were sent to these camps, and they were residential camps. And for a lot of them, I was in Iowa last month, and a fellow went out to visit him at his home. He said, you know, when I went into the seas, it was like going into a fancy hotel. There was running water, indoor plumbing, electricity. And what's it under my blanket? Well, that's a sheet. Well, what's a sheet? You know, I mean, it was a whole new experience. So it gave them confidence. And they came into Camp Allen, you know, a slumped shoulder, you know, with an attitude, chip on their shoulder. Mm-hmm. But they came out, yes, sir, no, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, their shoulders were straight. They were 30 pounds heavier. It gave them a lot of confidence. And I'm giving a CCC programs at the Paul Bunyan Museum this weekend at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
I think 1:30 on Saturday and Sunday.
You've been there. This is your third year in a row.
Yes, it is. It's a wonderful chainsaw carving competition. These carvers, they come from Japan, Germany. Incredible creations, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine the things. This is not your typical bear cub, you know, carving.
Well, the way I've likened it is a chainsaw sculpture championship without Bill Jamerson is like a UP vacation without a pasty.
Hey, that's a wonderful thing to say. Well, what they do, they provide the art, and I provide the storytelling. It's great to celebrate the art of the woodworkers, but it's kind of nice to talk about, you know, what it was like in 1885 in Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. You know, the log jams, the skidders and the swampers working in the woods, working 10 hours out in the cold. What do they eat? You know, what do they spend their money on? How do they get along? I explore these stories of life in the lumber camps. It's not about facts and dates. It's about our forefathers.
On Spectrum West today, we're talking with Bill Jamerson. He is going to be appearing at the U.S. Chainsaw Sculpture Championships. Bill is a historian. He's a singer. He's a songwriter. He's a storyteller. The championships are at the Paul Bunyan Logging Camp Museum in Carson Park in Eau Claire, Saturday and Sunday. You know, Bill, I've witnessed young people sitting on the ground with their legs crossed, mesmerized by stories that actually teach them important lessons. A lot of the credit goes to the medium that the storyteller enlists, and that is music. Music really does open channels of communication, doesn't it? Especially with young people.
Well, it does. Storytelling is important because it lays the groundwork, and they do listen. And you talked about learning values. History is not really about the past. It's about who we are today. It's so simple. Our forefathers, those lumberjacks, worked hard. They didn't give up. They had great pride. You know, in a lumber camp, they always knew who the best chopper was, the best skidder, who was the best loader. It was Harry. It was Louie. Mm-hmm. They took great pride. But, you know, what do we hear about lumberjacks? Well, they didn't take baths. They smelled. You know, they fought. Yeah, but they were good men. They were honest. They were hardworking. They were our forefathers. So I go into these stories. But what the music does is give an emotional element to it. It binds people to the story. I may talk about, you know, you write letters, you court a woman, and then she stands you up. And then I'll sing a song called The Ballad of Jack Haggerty. A broken-hearted raftsman from Greenville he came. His heart was broken. I mean, these beautiful ballads, it takes it to another level. And people appreciate those songs.
You also talk about mining. Mining isn't easy. I remember going through mining towns in the UP when I was a kid with my parents, small houses with tar paper siding. Again, not an easy life.
Oh, it was very difficult. But they came over, Alan, with the shirt on their backs. We forget that. Over in Finland and Sweden, they were serfs. They were indentured servants that if you were the second or third son, you did not inherit property. So they come over here. You know, they're making $40 a month during the Depression. That wasn't bad. Got your own house for $15 a month. But you're right. You're standing in front of a stone wall with an air pressure drill, drilling a hole 3 feet deep into solid rock. I mean, what could be more miserable than that? And you're 3,000 feet underground in pitch black.
I was going to say, you know, Bill Jamerson must have a very interesting perspective as you go through life. Did you notice your perspective changing when you decided to go into this? Most of us have no idea how tough life can get, but you seem to have a little, well, not a little bit, a lot of empathy for the things that these people went through.
I do. You talk to these men, and it changes your opinion. How dreadful it is to work in the mines. How horrible. But they were grateful, Alan. They used to laugh and joke going down the cages into work. And the lumberjacks, you talk to them, they didn't think the work was hard. 10 hours in the cold, you get in a rhythm with that cross-cut saw. It's a lot about breaking myths. You know, for example, the lumberjacks, they blew their stake in town every spring. We all know that story, right?
Mm.
The lumberjacks come into town. Well, you know what? Maybe 10 or 20% of them did. You go down to the casino on a Saturday night, and they're still doing it today. People blow their stake. And the iron miners we refer to, you know, they loved what they were doing. They were living the American dream. They were saving. They could buy 40 acres of land for $40. Yes, it's changed my perspective on these men because they were fine men. Yes, they had their issues and things of this sort, troubles, but they were workers. They never took vacation.
Now, we should also talk about your artistic endeavors and successes. I mean, you make music, you have a CD, you're a writer, you have a novel out, you had a video about Camp Forgotten. That's all complimentary to what it is you do at a live performance.
Well, you know, I tell people, if you're a filmmaker, you become a folk singer. It all kind of sounds the same. It's taking stories and communicating them to people in a particular venue. And people more and more see history and culture as entertainment. 30 years ago, we used to go to, you know, the Rotary Club, you know, travelogues, you know, with a projector and be lectured.
Mm-hmm.
Now they want to laugh. They want to have fun. So I incorporate the lumberjack tall tales and the funny stories and the iron mines and the heartfelt stories. Music communicates the emotional element and the storytelling, more of the historic factual element, and the documentary films is a combination of both.
Well, where can we find Bill Jamerson when he's not entertaining in our neighborhood?
BillJamerson.com, and that's J-A-M as in Mary, E-R-S-O-N.com. Take a look at it. Chances are I'll be in, you know, your neighborhood at some point in the next year or so.
That's neat. Bill Jamerson, thanks for pulling over and sharing a conversation with us here on Spectrum West, and safe travels to Eau Claire.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to my visit.
Chainsaws roar into action this weekend at Carson Park in Eau Claire, and Bill Jamerson will sculpt some stories for you as well. Why don't you stop by, say hi, and tell Bill how much you enjoyed meeting him on the radio. This is Spectrum West on WPR.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake is opening Monty Python's Spamalot on Wednesday. The show runs through August 25th. Communicating Doors is playing through Saturday at the Red Barn Theater north of Rice Lake. Bingo the Musical is playing at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through August 25th. The Untoward Generation opens Saturday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. The show joins productions of Crazy for You and The Foreigner. Crazy for You will run through August 18th, The Foreigner will run through August 25th, and The Untoward Generation will run through September 8th. The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson is playing Always Patsy Cline, and the show will run through Saturday. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will hold auditions for Spamalot Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Like an old-fashioned love song.
That's the music of Brady's and Gentlemen, a trio who performs and records in Germany. A year or so ago, I heard about Brady Swenson, found out he came from around here. He was coming home to entertain a hometown crowd at the Heidi Center for the Arts. Regressing, Brady Swenson fell in love with music and singing during his college days. Fast forwarding, he's been living in Germany for 20 years now. He's been busy playing leads in musicals, fronting and singing with several bands. He's back to put on a show with a mentor, Jerry Way, who helped plant the seed that grew into that love for music. I presume there are people in our Thursday morning audience who have not yet met Brady Swenson, and we're happy to provide the introduction.
Good morning, Thursday morning audience. It all started with an a cappella quartet out of college. Back in 1993, they decided to start their first college quartet competition, and we were the first champions of that. And after that, we all went our separate ways, but I got a teaching job and then suddenly got a call from a producer, an American producer living in Berlin, Germany. Mm-hmm. And they had a theater and were looking to do an American show in the history of jazz. And so they were looking for a barbershop quartet and figured four young guys straight out of college, that's probably our best bet to get them to pick up and move over for a year. Did that for a year, but we had success, and we're actually working even after the theater job, going out to different jazz clubs at night and performing there. Mm. We had lots of invitations to keep performing, so we decided, well, we'll stick around, and now it's been 20 years.
Cool.
Not just doing a cappella, but we did that the first 4 or 5 years that I was there, and then after my second group broke up, decided to continue on singing and started doing auditioning for musicals, and one thing led to another, and now I've been doing musicals the last 15 years and performing in various bands and writing my own music now since about 10 years and put together my own band now a couple years ago. And
sounds pretty smooth. That makes this next question sound weird, but I was going to say, is it tough making a foreign country your home? But it sounds as if it was a piece of cake for you.
Well, it's when you go over there not speaking a word of it, it's a bit of a shock. But after learning the language...
How do you learn the language? Just by hearing it, or did you have to go to school?
Diving in. No, I had a diary that I kept every day, and every new word I learned, I wrote it down. And if I didn't know what it was, and I went home, and before I went to bed every night, looked up the translation, wrote down the translation, and then the next day tried to use as many of those words on the list as possible. And you just have to be curious and always asking. That was the best teacher that I had, but I never had any formal training. That's why after 20 years, I still have problems with the grammar, because it's a very difficult language grammatically, because they have numerous ways of saying the word the.
They do.
Die, der, das, den, dem. So,
oh, my.
All mean the word the.
Gee whiz. Is there a certain or a good amount of English spoken there, though, as well? You can find someone who knows what you're talking about.
Yeah. Surprisingly, when I went over back then, I was told, don't worry, everybody speaks English. And this was just a few years after the wall had come down. And the theater I was working in was actually in the old eastern part. So most of the people that worked there and lived near around there where we hung out in school, if they had a second language, it was Russian. And it turns out that not as many people spoke English as we were told. So that also helped me, well, forced me to learn the language that much quicker.
Uh-huh.
But nowadays, it's really become, it is the center of Europe now. It's mm-hmm. every large companies in the music industry, every major label and all the different companies are moving to, have moved to Berlin. And now it's a true world international city and English is spoken everywhere. In fact, my band members, when I introduce songs and I slip into German, they're always like, don't do that.
Yeah.
It has a little more flair when you introduce it in English. So I keep catching myself and trying to flip back into English. So,
although the YouTube stuff that I saw and your website literally has subtitles in German under you speaking and under your bandmates, they have the American subtitles as they speak German.
So exactly. That's what we decided to do for our promotions. We would just allow ourselves to speak in whatever language is our mother tongue, whatever we feel natural, but make it clear for everybody, no matter who's watching.
On Spectrum West, it's Brady Swenson, singer-songwriter living in Berlin. That's in Germany. There's a Berlin, Wisconsin. I don't mean that one. Originally from Chippewa Falls, his band is Brady's and Gentlemen. There's a German variety, but there's going to be a Chippewa Falls variety. Coming up a week from today, the 15th, 7:30 at the Heidi Center, you're teaming up with Jerry Way. And was he a mentor of yours?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I grew up with Jerry. I just realized it that I literally had Jerry as a music teacher in grade school, in middle school, and in high school because he kept changing his jobs and moving right up with me. So I literally had him constantly through school while I was here in Chippewa. Anytime I get a chance to perform with him, we did a concert last year, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. and also a big fundraiser for the Heidi Center. And anytime I get a chance to perform with him, it's a pleasure and an cool. honor.
What do you think Jerry would have to say about Brady Swenson then and Brady Swenson now?
The main point, I just hope he's proud of me. Mm. He might be a bit surprised that I'm actually doing that. I was in music. Sports was a big part of my life. My father was coach at Chi High.
Did music really blossom for you in college? Is that where it happened?
Yeah. Well, it continues even now.
Sure.
I was going to be a music teacher. Then I got the chance to perform, mm-hmm. which I just thought was going to be a one-year hiatus from teaching. Turns out to be a 20-year hiatus. The actual writing myself is also a new niche in my career. I was always singing other people's music and doing musicals and in cover bands.
Is that a pleasant surprise for you that you're writing and able to write as well as you do?
Well,
I'm saying that.
Yeah.
You don't have to brag and
okay,
say.
I was going to say, I don't know. I hope that people enjoy my music. I am a bit surprised. I'm glad I can because it's a vent for me. It's a bit of therapy.
You also brought up very briefly in one of the answers, musical theater. It has, if not now, in the past, been a passion of yours. You've played many varied parts. Anything Goes, 42nd Street, Godspell, Pirates of Penzance, Les Miserables. That's my French accent. Okay. City of Angels, Hair, Jesus Christ Superstar. You have portrayed Jesus in at least two separate plays. And you've also played Judas, so you've actually betrayed yourself in a way.
Yes.
Is there any one part in all those that proved to be most challenging or your favorite or was best aligned to Brady Swenson?
Oh, I don't know.
Don't say Jesus because that's going to go a little above.
Right, that may be going a little too far. Although as far as performing
sure.
and as a challenge, that okay. as an actor, well, if you just yeah. are told you are supposed to play the Son of God,
yes.
Where do you start?
Yeah.
So that was the most challenging. And it is also vocally, then also being the best friend and the man who then betrays the Son of God. Also not an easy challenge.
Well, you have a class reunion next weekend, too. Wow. How about expectations on that?
I must admit, I went to our 20th, which was 5 years ago. So it's not as though I haven't seen a lot of people in 25 years. But I'm sure there'll be some people that I haven't seen in a long time. Even 5 years, when you get to a certain age, can be make a lot of difference. But I'm really looking forward to it. I even was inspired. I wrote a song that I released just on the internet called 1988. If I can do a little promotion, people can go on the band's Reverb Nation. That's all written together, reverbnation.com/Brady's Gentleman without the and. And if you go on there, you can check out 1988. And if you'd like to purchase it, I'm donating half of the proceeds to the Half the Sky movement, which helps support underprivileged women around the world to help educate them and give them opportunity to break out of difficult situations.
It's obvious, Brady, that you're doing what you were meant to do. Is music always going to be what you do you think?
Oh, I'm sure of it. I actually got back kind of realizing that not everybody can be a Mick Jagger. I was thinking a couple of years ago that, well, maybe I ought to consider slowly getting back into what I actually studied to do, which was the teaching side of music. And I got back into that, and I'm teaching at a music school in Berlin, also giving private lessons. Now that has also come back into my life, for me, definitely it'll be a part of my life until the very end.
Do you teach instrument, voice? What?
I teach voice, ensemble, choral singing, harmonies, and then I also give private voice lessons.
Well, listen, it's been really a lot of fun talking with you again and finally meeting you in person. Brady, thanks for coming.
Well, thank you very much, Alan.
One day a country boy stole a city girl's heart. He knew it must be right, 'cause it fell right from the start. He asked her for her hand, and she said, yeah, for life. It was the perfect example of when all in love goes right. They'd be the first to say the road gets rough sometimes, but it's all worth it if you hang out for the ride. So take a seat, my love, 'cause this could last a while. Let's just enjoy it in good old-fashioned style, like an old-fashioned love song. Old-fashioned tale about an old-fashioned life, where an old-fashioned man loves his old-fashioned wife, and old-fashioned love is enough for us to all get by in good old-fashioned style.
That's good stuff. Brady Swenson, next Thursday evening, the 15th, at the Heidi Center with Jerry Way. And if you're a musician who just loves to drop in and jam, they're having a pre-reunion session. That's his class reunion. Next Friday night at the TNC Roundabout on 124 north of Chippewa Falls. Brady Swenson, one of the many Chippewa Falls products doing good things out there in that big old world.
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Honda, featuring the redesigned 2013 Honda Accord. Introducing HondaLink, a cloud-based system that connects to digital content without a mobile phone. More at kenvance.com.
Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering home mortgage applications online, as well as information about the process, payment amounts, title insurance, mortgage insurance, and more. More at wisconsincu.org.
Spectrum Memo again this summer. The Chill on the Hill Summer Concert Series at UW River Falls is happening next Tuesday at 7 p.m. August 13th. Final concert of the summer. It's The Pines, good group, at the Melvin Wall Amphitheater on the UWRF campus. Celebrate summer with poets and authors sharing their original works at the L.E. Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire Tuesday evening, August 13th. That begins at 7 p.m. New York City actor, educator, and playwright Eric Mark Olson invites area young people ages 4 and up to the musical production A Pie Rat's Tale. That's Friday, August 9th, 5 p.m., featuring actors and singers of music theater at the Shell Lake Arts Center. In Ladysmith, the Music in the Park summer season has a few more weeks. Tonight, Thursday night, it's Music with Tex. Oh, cool. Chill on the Hill for Kids at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls features Colleen Crow and All About Typography Art next Tuesday, August 13th, 11 a.m. Info at cvca.net. Then, let's see, tonight, Thursday night, 7 o'clock here, the Swampers present This Great Valley at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, and a salute to Pure Water Days. Yeah. Well, the fifth edition of The Vision and the Word is coming up in four chapters to be held at the Janet Carson Gallery of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. It's where poets and artists get together. It's been around a number of years, and we talked with a person who has the same status, Alan Jenkins, businessman and writer who was one of the originators of the collaboration back in 1997. He stopped by to fill us in on details and where it all began.
There were some visual artists that had put together theme-based exhibits. Now, as I recall, one was on Poe, one was on Shakespeare. Forgive me if I don't have this correct. One was on Gershwin. Then I was approached with this idea of, instead of interpreting historical writers or composers, that we bring in some local poet talent and create this collaborative project. Well, we did, and in 97, the first one went up, and that first one was actually taken to Madison by the Wisconsin Arts Board, and all the visual art was displayed in their hallway galleries, and some of us went down, and we had brown bag lunch readings. So at the very outset, it received that stamp of approval, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 16 years, there have been five events. Does that mean there is, what, one every 3 years? Is there a rhythm to it, or do you just do it when you feel like you need it?
It's really somewhat random, but, I mean, 3 to 4 years. Let's consider, for example, not the 2010 show, but even 2006 or the one before that, the second or the third. Some of these young leaders that are coming up in the arts community and some of the young poets did not have the prominence yet in the Chippewa Valley community. You know, there are people that have emerged during that interim, and a number of them are involved in this show.
And you just alluded to something that I wanted to ask about, and that is the evolution of the event. I mean, I can see the event evolving, but have the participants come forward and said, you know, this is cool, and it has made me a better artist or a better writer?
Well, I haven't heard that, but I think both from the standpoint of the visual artists and the writers, but also members of the audience. I mean, I've had people come up to me and say, when are you going to do another one of those?
That's a good sign.
I'm not even sure how we got this one started. Somebody said something. We said, okay, let's sit down and talk about it. And, of course, you know, it's been since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Let me point out, too, Al, that the poetry has, from the initial concept, always supported the visual art. The poetry readings bring people in for a longer period of time, and that's also when the visual artist and the poet speak about their collaboration.
I read that quote, the poetry has always supported the visual art. My take on that was, is there a chicken or the egg to this thing? Does one of them come first and the other one then, you know, is a reaction to it, or how are things arranged?
Look at that, what I just said at two levels. Okay. When I say the poetry supports the visual art,
right.
I'm speaking organizationally. Between collaborators, there is an equality, if you will. It is a two-way stream, and so it is truly collaborative. They labor, if you will, together in order to produce this conversation in poetry and visual art, which then you both see and hear. So there's the individual, well, the paired level,
right.
And then there's the organizational concept.
I was wondering to myself, and I'm not going to myself anymore, I'm going to let it out. One of the underlying functions of the event, could it be to possibly play matchmaker too? I mean, are you looking for poetry buffs to come out and suddenly realize that, ooh, look at that, there's visual art out there, and vice versa?
Oh, I think so. And as I say, you know, if you look at the list of participating artists or the list of participating poets, well, I can imagine that someone would want to come out and hear Mike Perry, but by the same token, there may be people that want to come out and hear his collaborator, Anders Schaefer. You may have the people that come to to hear the poetry because they love poetry, and then suddenly there's a Anders Schaefer painting. I mean, you just don't know. I don't know what my own collaborator is going to have in the show.
Oh, really?
Okay. No, I don't. Okay. And that's part of it.
So how are you paired?
How are we paired? Well, it is. It can be either random or people choose. Now, this time,
not names in a hat, huh?
Well, it started out that way.
Oh, okay.
But this time, I think because you have a number of people experienced with the project, and I'm one case. I had met Susan Saveda Unkifer through my late dear friend Norma Dupre, who collaborated with her in 2010, and unfortunately, we lost Norma before the show. Well, I had seen some of Susan's work, and I said, I have to find out what's behind that. And so we've collaborated for 2 years. I mean, I guess I can't speak for everyone else, but it's been people that have chosen. They knew someone and said, you know, I'd like to know more about that artist, or I'd like to know more about that poet. So I think there's a lot more of the voluntary aspect to it, which, frankly, strengthens the collaboration in the show.
I might be losing something, though, because we're using the word collaborate very often, and you're saying that you have no idea what your collaborator is going to do.
Ah, but I know the mind of my collaborator. Okay. In other words, we've had, in this case with Susan Saveda Unkifer, mm-hmm. I think we've only met in 2 years, 5 times 6 at the most. But these have been very intense discussions about the work. And I've seen dozens of samples of her work, and I've shared some of my work with her, and then we have these discussions. You see the work, you hear the work, but out of the discussion about the work, there comes this greater understanding.
And that's just the way you two are working, or do most of the people work, or have there been people that have been getting together every week to try to put together something that's cool?
I'll tell you what.
It doesn't matter?
I'm the co-coordinator with Sandra Lindau. I don't have a clue what anyone else is doing.
Good.
But you see, that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of it because, in effect, each pairing, and we do have one trio, that's something new.
That.
Each pairing sets its own course to get to the show.
Hmm.
And when the show comes together, no one really knows what everyone else has been doing.
Because you can't really put parameters on an artist
No. And part of it is the spontaneity of the results.
And that leads me to this question, and I'm going to read it the way I wrote it. Is it important to automatically notice a relationship between the poem and the art, or is a solid part of the enjoyment an actual revelation as described by the poet?
Oh, you're going to have to read that again, or rephrase it.
You walk in and you know what somebody is saying and you see the art. Should you automatically realize a relationship between the two, or is part of the enjoyment of coming to this event hearing them say, here's what we did, here's the relationship, and you going, wow.
Well, and I think part of the purpose of each visual artist and poet,
mm-hmm.
or in the case of the trio, the three of them, it is that 20-minute presentation in which that very thing you're describing takes place. It is a discussion of the collaboration. Well, the visual art is on the wall or on a pedestal, whatever the case may be. Then you hear the poet say, here's my response to the work. Now, what's interesting is the work that's in the show is not the work that the poet's responding to.
Okay.
It's the body of work. It's all the samples of the work that the visual artist has shared. So the show is a continuity of the visual artist's work and, in a certain respect, the poet's work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alan Jenkins, our guest on Spectrum West, The Vision and the Word 5. That's the number 5. You don't use the Roman numeral for some reason. You must want to be just kind of a grassroots.
We're just simple Midwesterners, Alan.
I thought you'd have a V there, but I guess not. It's August 16th through 25th at the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. Has this turned out the way you envisioned it?
I guess we'll find out on the 16th through the 25th.
Well, the first four. Has the whole concept
I think each one is different. I think there was a period where the project was fading a little bit, and then we got together in April of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've worked 27 months to put this thing together.
Mm. Does it need 27 months to be put together?
Again, that has varied. I mean, we started early. in this instance, and frankly, I think some people waited until there's 6 months left.
Yeah, sure. Give us all the particulars of the event again, right from the horse's mouth.
I want to say at this point that the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council has done a tremendous job as sponsor and a very supporting sponsor. And if you go to www.eauclairearts.com, they have put together a wonderful page with an animated slideshow of some of the work and a couple of the artists. And it gives the schedule of events and who's, you know, presenting on one of four evenings. The show will be up on the 15th, but the opening is the 16th. Okay. That's Friday. And there will be readings Friday the 16th, Sunday afternoon the 18th. The 3rd is Friday the 23rd. These are evening readings on Friday. And then Sunday afternoon the 25th. So four readings.
Okay.
If anyone has not been to the Janet Carson Gallery,
it's wonderful.
It is a beautiful venue, and the acoustics for poetry are tremendous. I mean, if you haven't been to the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, what are you waiting for? Some of the poetry will be framed and on the wall. I'm putting together a booklet, which will be on a pedestal next to whatever it is Susan's doing.
Well, I've always thought your work should be on a pedestal anyway.
Well, you know, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before the fall. But thank you.
Alan Jenkins, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Spectrum Memo Musical Theater returns to the Mabel Tainter this weekend with an evening with Gershwin. Performances Friday 7:30, Saturday 7:30, Sunday 2 p.m. Info and tickets at MabelTainter.org. Sports with an artistic flair, the Menominee Blue Caps Vintage Baseball Team hosts their final match of the season. Yes, they call them matches. Saturday against the Mankato Baltics. It's a doubleheader, and it begins at 1 p.m. at River Heights Elementary School in Menominee. Hey, thanks for listening. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Next week, Volunteer Wisconsin will talk about bully plays, more music, and maybe some folk tattling. Spectrum West. We'll be back next Thursday at 10 with more of what keeps us entertained, creative, and civilized in Western Wisconsin. See you then.